That feeling of standing out so loud in your family, feeling like you don't belong, like you're different, like you're air quotes the troublemaker, the chaotic one, the one always seeing so much and calling it out, moving through cycles, constantly being judged and talked about, always choosing something different than what they all have done and can't understand. Feeling isolated, feeling something always and constantly off, yet knowing and owning that when you walk into the room, something happens. These are the symptoms of being the pink sheep, being chosen. It's hard to fit in, feel the same as everyone else, subscribe to what everyone else wants, thinks, and feels. You are the pink sheep. You've had to break free from the status quo of lineage and worldly expectations because something internally signals to you that it's a prison and not freedom. You feel broken because you're separate and not a part of the dysfunction that existed, the emotionless conversations, and the sweeping under the rug of the trauma and pain of the line before you. The line has finally met you. The line has called you to shift it, to bring it all to the light, to no longer disown the truth, the pain, the behaviors, and the allowance of what has been. The line has met you. To be the healer, the system changer, and bloodline shifter, recoding what's been flowing through the bloodline and awaken what's been dormant. You are called. You are chosen. You are who your ancestors have slaved for, to be the voice of change, the embodiment of healing, the awakened warrior. Heavy is the crown that sits upon your head. This isn't about telling your family's business. No, this is not a telenovela. We don't want to do those. That's the business of the things that have been unhealed for decades. This is about choosing the call of being the one to end it all. Let's get into it. When we came here on divine mission with a divine plan and a divine purpose. A path meant to be walked in our authenticity. But along the way, life happened. Generational patterns got in the way. Systemic barriers showed up. And we were left to adapt and adopt imprints, stories, and survival modes that were never meant to define us forever. Here, we hold space, sacred space, to heal those narratives, those traumas, those generational and systemic barriers, guiding you back home to your true divine self and your soul's calling. This is the Soul Work Podcast, your home for healing with love, so you can live out your soul work in truth and power. Welcome to Soul Work with Love, the podcast, where soul meets strategy, spirit meets systems, and healing becomes your legacy. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Soul Work Podcast with Love. I am Love Ashley Lane. I am here to be your guide. I am your favorite pink sheep, your holistic healer, soulful strategist, and I said pink sheep already. This episode, we are diving into the cost of being chosen. Everybody wants to be chosen. But when you actually have to live out what that means, my God in heaven, the battles are not for the weak. The isolation is not for the weak. So prepare your mind, your heart, your soul, get your cup of tea or your coffee, get cozy, get your journal, and let's dive in. Nice big inhale. And exhale. So I wanted to just really talk about this whole thing about being chosen, right? Everybody comes to this earth with a purpose. Yet when we talk about being chosen, in our lineage, in our communities, in our just being chosen, period, right? There is a different kind of mission, a different kind of favor, a different kind of anointing, a different kind of fight, right, that these particular people have. I believe I have been called in my lineage to break a hell of a lot of cycles. And the more I keep saying yes to healing, yes to aligning myself with my soul work, yes to the natural flow of what my spirit is calling me to do, what feels good, right? Really taking in the work that I've done to listen to my body, listen to my intuition, connecting back to that, trusting that, right? I've done an episode or two on what it's like to heal your relationship with your intuition after you've experienced so much trauma, after you've experienced so much abuse. And the purpose behind why doing our healing work, right? Doing the work to really regain trust of our intuition, not so much our body, but our intuition, the spiritual body, the energetic body. That work is important because when you are called and created to do something, like when you are chosen, right? Everybody is called. Many are called, few are chosen, right? Scripture says many are called, few are chosen. Everybody has a calling, but there are specific people on this earth that are here during such a time as this that have very specific callings, right? And are going to be what I like to call the pink sheep. This is the black sheep, but I think we've made the term black sheep very, like when I see black sheep in my head, I think about what comes to mind is Wednesday from the Addams Family, right? In my eyes, she's the pink sheep, right? But we see her as the black sheep of her family because of how dark she is, but she's so powerful, right? She has a power on her. She's tapped into her shadow side and has become whole, even though she's still trying to maneuver. And I have not seen season two of Wednesday. I don't know why I'm waiting for like the right time to watch that, which I will probably do it tonight. So, but the pink sheep, right? The pink sheep is the person who says yes to being chosen, yes to being the cycle breaker, yes to being the wounded warrior, yes to the pain and the deep connection to the emotion and the feeling and the pain. That way it can be transmuted and changed and teach that to other people, yet recreate cycles, recreate DNA, recreate peace, recreate joy, recreate something different for generations to come. Do the healing work through self, right? Because everything comes through the body, and do it in the earth, right? Do it in the lane that they have been called to, right? So our healing is a very deep personal transformation, and it's meant to also expand us and guide us into what it is that we're called to do, right? So, we're going to talk about three different things in this first segment. One, the loneliness of being the first to in your lineage, in your friends group. Not that I don't care about your friends group. I think the family portion of this is where it hits home for a lot of people, because that's where our first innate place of residency is, where we understand relationship, where we understand self, right? If we see self as home and our families are a part of that first version of self, that first place where we connect our identity to self, then, it makes sense why a lot of things need to be healed in other ways, right? Because Not for nothing, our parents were taught things. I said learned. Our parents were taught things from their parents, right? Everybody's carrying a bag with them. I don't care what anybody says. Everybody's carrying a bag with them. It's an emotional bag, it's a spiritual bag, it's a physical bag, it's a trauma bag, it's a fatherless bag, it's a motherless bag, it's an abuse, like everybody's carrying a bag with them. The level of what's being carried over into parenting, into relationships, into like romantic relationships, into friendships, into, how we work, how we ba like how we take care of ourselves comes from how much of that bag have we taken account for. And when I say account, not like everything's your responsibility. No. How much of that bag have we actually like went through and healed? Right? Everybody keep like I keep hearing this thing like where no, you need to just move on. But it's like if the 5-year-old version of me is still having tantrums now in relationships because I'm not having my needs met, I need to address why the 5-year-old didn't get their needs met. I need to address what happened at that 5-year-old level. Because as much as we want to say, oh, you're 38, you need to get over it, being 5 was only 10 minutes ago. Right, that stuff still sits with you. It still sits in your body. It still sits in your memory bank. It still sits in your behaviors. It still sits in your patterns. Right? Trauma recreates everything about you. Everything about you. So, we have to understand why we're being chosen. Right? Because it can, like, there was a moment where I had where I was like, I don't understand why my life is so hard. And I had a family member say to me, your life is hard because of X, Y, and Z. And I'm just like, I don't think that's it. Right? So if I never healed, did the healing work on reconnecting to my intuition and learning how to retrust myself, my spirit guides, my relationship with God, my intuition, right? The voices that I need to hear. I would have took what that family member said and be like, oh my God, you're so right. But I know it's not true because I see something that they don't. I'm aware of something that they're not. Right. We're going to talk about soul contracts of the family. And then the role of the emotional translator, scapegoat, and or healer, right? Really recognizing what role you have been playing in your family and what role you are meant to be playing in your family. So when we talk about the loneliness of being first, let me tell you what isolation feels like. I've shared this before, but when I was in Cambodia, I said yes to going to teach yoga in Cambodia. I was like, nobody gets an opportunity like this. These opportunities come far few in between. I could teach yoga anytime, anywhere in the States. Teaching in another country, in a foreign country, in a country that like is, man, it was beautiful, right? I said yes, and God was like, gotcha. And when I tell you the first like a month and change, maybe even longer than that, I started to have these feelings of isolation, like not loneliness, but I could feel like I felt alone, but it wasn't like it was a very weird alone, right? And I write this in my book, Married to Trauma. If you have not got it, it's on Amazon. I write this in my book, right, where I had to learn the three different there was three different versions of isolation in that season that I was being taught, that God was teaching me. I had just experienced isolation from an abusive partner. That version of isolation made me see black and white. It was confusing at first because I thought it was like, oh, he just wants me to himself, da 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 da, all the things. But that wasn't healthy isolation, right? Another version of isolation was God actually taking me out of my comfort zone and placing me in a foreign land, somewhere I had never been. I can't speak the language, right? I have no idea what the day-to-day is like in this country, right? The heat is a different kind of heat. The rain is a different kind of rain. The food is a different kind of food. The bugs are a different kind of bug. You know what I'm saying? Like God had to isolate me to get my attention, to get me in reconnection deeper with him. The other version of isolation was the isolation of myself, right? That version of isolation where I come back home to me. I come back home to my likes, my dislikes, my intuition, right? To where I start learning what does it look like to actually be with me. Right? There's an isolation that often feels like loneliness. I have to say, I've not experienced that in a way to where like it's been a while since I've experienced that. Let me just say that. It's been a while since I've experienced that. And the level of isolation, like, so learning those three different types of isolation, I believe, allowed me to prepare myself for what isolation in family dynamics will look like because of choosing a path that is unfamiliar to them, right? Choosing a path that feels like I kind of have no choice to do. Because I keep trying to do all these other things and do things the way everybody else needs me to do them, how systems need me to do them, how, you know, what I'm being, you know, like I keep trying to do things the way everybody else is asking me to do them or saying I need to do them and still trying to manipulate that way with the way I need things to be to align with me, right? And it's still not working. It's still not working. I'm getting no's across the board. It's still not working. It still is not working. When I said yes to leaving a full-time job in 2022, or 20, yeah, 2022, I said yes to everything else that was going to come with that. I said yes to continuing this podcast. I said yes to filtering through, okay, what are the other streams of income that need to start? What's not working? I said yes to how do I want my days to be? I said yes to something different, right? I said yes to moving slow because when I move slow, I get clarity. If I have to move fast and hustle and move into burnout, I lose clarity. I lose focus on what the actual goal is, what the actual work is. So, one of the main costs of being chosen in your bloodline to break some stuff, to shake some shit up, is isolation. You are going to have to be okay with not being the way your family is expecting you to be. That means you're gonna bump heads. I mean, it just is what it is. You're gonna bump heads, but you're gonna bump heads if you keep having to like trying to defend yourself, right? Because at some point, like that saying says, the com it was a one-on-one conversation with you and God. It wasn't a conference call. So that level of isolation in this sense that you're going to experience is going to have to come with some bold confidence and knowing that what you and God talked about, what your soul keeps calling at you to do, is what you have to walk out, right? And I'm learning that there's a way to do that, because I've never been this egoic, non-humble person. I'm gonna have to turn some things up a notch to really find that sweet spots of confidence, right? To really be like, yeah, no. X, Y, and Z is no longer working. I've been trying X, Y, and Z. This is where I am, and this is what the plan is, right? I'm okay with having a conversation about what the plan is with the people that are willing to listen and not judge, right? Because what also comes with being the first in your family, to be the system breaker, the lineage changer, the wounded warrior of awareness and change, is being misunderstood and feeling that disconnect, right? I started feeling that a while ago. I've been feeling that for almost my whole life, to be honest, and never really understood what it was. Never really understood what it was. When I said yes to going to Peru to get my 300 hour, all of a sudden, I felt this deep connection. It was like I finally found people that feel like family, that feel like my soul tribe, right? And this is no disrespect to my family. I love my family deeply. I love my family deeply. I love my family deeply. All from my great on both sides, both great grandmothers, both grandmothers, all the siblings, all the aunts, all the cousins, all the great, everybody. I love my family deeply. I love the culture. I love the blackness. I love all of it. And I will never ignore how I feel very disconnected to certain things and environments and the way things are done, the way things are spoken about, the way things are swept under the rug, the way things are meant are being said to just push down, push it away. Stop crying, like almost rejecting the emotional state of a person, right? I have when you say yes to the call, and sometimes you kind of don't have a choice, right? Because God will choose somebody else, and He has His few that He will sit there and keep like nagging at you until you say yes, because He knows you're gonna say yes. God knows you're gonna say yes, right? But you are committed to being misunderstood and disconnected. As long as you are staying connected to self, staying connected to source, to God, whoever you subscribe to, everything else is gonna come. That soul tribe is gonna come. Those other pink sheeps are gonna find you. Right, you stay connected to you stay connected to the truth of your being, the truth of your call, right? Even in the moments where it gets foggy, even when it gets a little weird, right? So we reframe, right? Well, we reframe that. Loneliness is a sacred space for transformation. That is the reframe, right? We don't want loneliness and isolation to be such a negative thing. It's not a negative thing, right? If we have to constantly need to be around people, I'm gonna question how much work have you done on yourself to love yourself, right? How like can you like I hear people say, "Oh, I can't be alone." Not my problem. Don't come clinging to me, 'cause I love being alone. I can be by myself, right? And let's reframe loneliness. Loneliness is a sacred space for transformation. So much happens when we allow ourselves to be still. Like when people are always asking me about yoga and poses, the postures, I always say to them, the hardest posture for someone to attain is sitting still. When you can attain that, when you can sit in the posture of stillness, then you can achieve yoga. You not achieve yoga, but you have stepped into your yoga practice, right? Number two, the soul contract of family. What it means to have a spiritual assignment tied to your family lineage. What is your spiritual assignment? And you will only know that by actually looking at what have you had to heal deeply that is still showing up as dysfunction. Some people like to make dysfunction okay. I'm not okay with dysfunction. I can't function like that. I like peace. I like quiet. I can't stand chaos, right? I like my inner world already does enough. I can keep myself entertained. Very much so. Right? Being chosen isn't random. It's tied deeply to your call and your purpose. So we have to say yes to it every single day, no matter how hard it is. Right? We have to say yes to healing. We have to say yes to the inspection. We have to say yes to our way of living in joy. Right? We have to say yes to shifting what has been normal into, you know, understanding that what's been normal is dysfunction. What's been called normal in your family that you are the only one seeing that is actually dysfunctional and hurting other people. It has even hurt you to where you've had to heal from it, right? There's that saying, and I believe it wholeheartedly, that the people who need to be in therapy are the ones who won't go to therapy and are sending people to therapy. I'm just leave that there. And then the role of the emotional translator, scapegoat, and or healer. This was a good one. And this is something that I've personally worked on with my therapist, where I didn't realize that I was the one emotionally falling on the sword for everybody else's shit. Right. And I think about even growing up. If my brother got in trouble, we got in trouble. If I got in trouble, I got in trouble. But if my brother got in trouble, we got in trouble. And I'm like, how the hell I'm getting in trouble for something he did and I wasn't even around? Like, we're both getting yelled at if he got in trouble, right? There was so much emotional weight put on me for everybody else's stuff. Everybody else's things, everybody else's space, right? And that made me become the scapegoat, the emotional scapegoat. And I think what we miss in a lot of families, and I want to say especially Black and Brown families, is the emotional piece. In my experience, the emotional piece gets pushed aside and told that it's not as important. So my question is, how do we bypass the emotional needs of people and run straight to just the spiritual needs when those two are tied to each other? Because then there's a false sense of care if we're only focusing on the spiritual needs of a person and not the emotional needs, right? I always think about Maslow's hierarchy of needs and then discovered that there were additional levels to that. So it's like that the root of those basic needs, right? And then as it goes, as children grow also, we should be tending to those emotional and spiritual needs also, like a lot deeper. They're one and the same. They're not really that far apart from each other, right? Because if I'm wounded spiritually somewhere, I'm wounded somewhere emotionally also, right? Like if you've ever heard someone who's dealt with narcissistic abuse, right? That's mental, psychological, and emotional abuse. There's warfare that has been created in that place. And most of them will tell you from personal experience also, I'd rather this person just punch me in my damn face. Because then I can get past that Right? I can get past the physical abuse quicker than I can the emotional and the mental and spiritual torment that this person puts on you. So, understanding what role you've played in your family will also tell you where the dysfunction has been and what you have been called to change. Right? That is your family system. That is, so if we look at family system in a way where we see like the systems that play out in our day to day, because remember, I'm always saying the first system we have to clear is our bodily system, right? And that comes attached to our family system and how we maneuver in the worldly system also, right? That heavenly system, like, so really paying attention to your system and how it connects to your family system, how it connects to the spiritual system, how it connects to this earthly system. And when I say earthly system, I'm talking about like the ways of the world with our current administration and spending, and are we subscribing to the American dream thing? You know what I'm saying? Like all of those. How does this role show up? How like what ends up being the role that you have taken on in your family? That is where you heal. That is where you've been called to change, right? Because we don't need any more children coming into this world who are emotionless. We've already got an issue with the video games, right? And I think those things are causing them to be overly emotional. We need to set the next generation up to be a new level of strong, a new level of intuitive, right? A new level of not being the scapegoat emotionally or the emotional translator, right? What role have you been playing and how has it shaped you? What has that role that you didn't ask for? How has that shaped you into who you are now? And how has it helped you or hindered you or like sit with that, right? We got to sit with that. I used to be the scapegoat. I was the person that would fall on the sword for everything and everybody's stuff. And I started to see it more in my romantic relationships. That made me circle back to my family relationships, right? Like where that came up in my family system for me. So in therapy, that's what's been coming up. So now that I've learned how to set boundaries and actually say to people, I will not be your emotional trash can. I am not falling on the sword for your stuff. Right? Even to the point where I don't allow my empathy to overtake me into changing how I actually feel about something. Right? So I was having a conversation with a friend the other day, and God rest their souls, this friend's parents passed away. And I was just having conversation, like we were talking about parents and our relationships with them and this, that, and the third. And he was, this person was just like, Ash, like, I wish I could have those fights with my parents. And I said to him, I said to this person, I was like, I empathize with that. And, and I can also recognize what my real experience is, right? Like I can't, I'm not shifting that for anyone anymore, right? Like my experience still is my experience. I don't wish, the opposite. Right. And I empathize with how this person feels. And I'm able, like I said last episode, I'm able to see how something no longer affects me, but affects somebody else and separate the two. Like I have empathy for that. I've also moved away from playing the savior. Right. And expecting other people to be my savior. Right. It's one thing if I'm asking for help because of something being short, whatever, whatever, what have you. It's another thing for me to have expectation for someone else to come and save me, right? This is where, for me, conversations are very enriching. Conversations really, really do something for me. Like, it lets me know that I'm loved. It lets me know that I'm being heard. It lets me know that we can actually talk about something and I can share instead of there being judgment, and you give me no space to, you close off the door for me to have space to speak up for myself, right? That is love to me. That is appreciation. That is the epitome of holding space. Right. Don't know why I went there, but I was the scapegoat and I became the healer because I said no more. Being the scapegoat, being the person that would fall on the sword for everything, staying so emotionally tied to everything, right, and not releasing that, that was giving my power away to everybody else. Right. When I stayed in those deep emotional spaces, I was giving my power away to everybody else. Now it's like, now I know how to get her. No, you don't. Now you don't. Now you don't even know if it made me cry or not. Cause I probably looked at my phone and threw it right on the bed. Right? I'm not falling on the sword for anybody else anymore. I've actually told a human, like I told a person out loud to his face, I will not be your emotional trash can. You need to go get a therapist. That has nothing to do with me. I will not be entangled at all. So what now you're looking at, what do you need to set in place so that you don't keep playing that role? Because you can go from emotional scapegoat to the healer. Right. You can go from the emotional translator to the healer, to the person holding space. Right. I think that's why a lot of people I know end up becoming therapists. Because now they've learned the art of like being able to hold space with separation prayerfully. Right. And like I said, it has also showed up in my romantic relationships. Right. So, again, when we talk about early childhood development, our family is our first teachers at relationship, at emotional security, at how all of that foundational stuff helps us and prepares us, right? So we can't ignore what may have happened in childhood, because if we haven't done any healing work or brought those things to our awareness, it's going to show up in your relationships at 38. Sorry to tell you that. Don't care what anybody else says. Scientific evidence is out there, right? Like, because life is so short and it moves so quickly, a lot of that stuff will carry over if you are not made aware of it. Even if you are made aware of it and you still choose to do it anyway, that's on you, bro. That's on you, sis. All right. Nice big inhale and exhale. And we are going to take a short break. We'll be back. And we're back. Nice big inhale and exhale. Beautiful. So the second part, we're going to dive into what the freedom and faith of choosing your divine identity looks like, right? So when we say yes to the call of being chosen, because again, many are called, few are chosen. We have to remember that we're stepping into our true divine identity that is going to be separate and apart from the family and how people want us to be and who they want us to be, all of those things, right? So Three things we're going to look at is the liberation and lineage healing, emotional visibility and healing, and following your soul's calling. Okay. So the liberation and lineage healing, right? When we choose healing, we create a ripple effect. We create a new way of doing and having, because we've said yes to our being. I love talking about be, do, have, right? Because I think once I got hold of this, and I heard it enough to where maybe like the last two times I heard it, it actually started to click, right? And sometimes I'm a little hard-headed, guys. Sometimes I have to hear things a certain number of times for it to actually like lock in. Guilty as charged. But us saying yes to our healing is shifting the trajectory of what that thing was, right? In its wholeness of what needed to be healed. So if I'm healing, the emotional scapegoat role, right? And now I've become the healer. What does that mean? That means I've said no more to falling on the sword for boundaryless conversations that come with jabs, that come with judgment, that come with a lot of things that actually are like projections, right? And I've said yes to, I'm ready to hold space for you whenever you're ready. I'm ready to have a conversation with you whenever you're ready. And I've made that almost like a tagline for any and everybody, right? Like my thing now is whenever this person is ready to have a conversation, we can have a conversation. But if the conversation is going to come with, right, but if it's like, oh no, this is the conversation where it's one way and you're taking jabs, like calling me stupid, telling me that my choices are dumb, like all of these other things, that's not a conversation. Let's just keep it frank. Like that's not a conversation, right? Conversations are gonna have their little thing, right? Because what we're doing is we're having two different people with two different opinions and perspectives come to the table and be able to lay all of the, like, hopefully vulnerably lay their cards out on the table, right? Which means there's going to come emotion with it. Everybody has emotion, right? The people that don't have emotion are psychos. Like there's something. I mean, they're the ones we see in the mass murder movies. Like they've just withdrew those. I know some people like that. They are not in my circle. They can go far away. And right, like that is for me what is healing. Conversations are healing for me because they are how I gain clarity. Right, when I am able to say what I need to say and hear what I need to hear, and we can have a dialogue and find a place of understanding, because there's always going to be a place of understanding if both parties want that place of understanding, right? Then that's healing, right? To be able to have a conversation is healing. Some people will avoid having a conversation with you because they don't want to heal. They like the chaos. They like to stay in that victim space. They like to be able to point the fingers and blame somebody else without actually looking at what part that they played. What could they do different? That's not going to change a generation. That's not going to change anything in the lineage. That's going to keep the cycle going. Cycle breakers want to do something different than what has been done. Cycle breakers want to look at what has been happening, what has become an ailment, right? And how can I make it different? Because I don't like this. I don't want this. I want peace. I don't want chaos, right? Cycle breakers want something different than what has been done, right? I actually said this to somebody a couple weeks ago. It was just like one of those things where it was like, oh, you know how that person is. They say this all the time. And I'm just like, true. And just because it's the history of how they've been doesn't mean I have to continue to accept it. You don't have to continue to accept how someone behaves. especially when it's causing harm in some way, shape, or fashion, especially when you are being adamant about trying to do something different, right? It's not going to come with perfection. Doing things different is not going to come with perfection because you're actually trying to break free from behaviors and cycles and patterns that have always been. Today is a new day that I've never experienced before. Yesterday was the same way. Tomorrow's going to be the same way, right? So there's like, there needs to be grace for being human, right? I give grace to you. You keep behaving that way. That's how you want to behave. That doesn't mean I have to keep interacting with that. That doesn't mean I have to keep allowing that into my space. That doesn't mean I have to keep saying, oh, that's just how she is, and inviting myself into that energy and that aura and that chaos. No. Once I've been saying this for years, and you can, if you're new to the show, it was called Voices of the Body before, go back to some of my very first episodes. I think I was kind of lit there, but go back to the very first, maybe the first 2 months of this podcast, where I talk about, and I've been saying it for years, your healing journey turns into an awareness journey. You are constantly being more and more aware of yourself, of the people around you, of your intuition, of your emotions, of your triggers, of all of those things, right? You're never, like, we're whole, and healing is something that happens lifelong. My grandmother passed away, y'all, my best friend, she's been healing her whole entire life, literally up until the day she died. She was in the hospital healing and died. So healing is literally a lifelong thing. It never stops. You are constantly walking yourself back home, and you are already whole. Right? Healing is actually building awareness of self, moving all of these things out the way to come back home to you, to your truth, to your being, to the version of you that God ordained to get through these battles, to get through this lineage, to change and do the things that you have been called to do without second guessing. Right? We come here and life just starts putting these things on us. But the liberation in healing your lineage means you're saying, I don't want to do what's already been done because it doesn't feel like freedom. It feels like bondage. It feels like a prison. And also redefining what freedom looks and feels like for you. Right? What is it that feels like for you? What does that need to look like? What does that need to be like? Where does it need to be? Right? You might have a family who has never left the city their whole entire lives. You're born, you get here, and now you've gone through high school, you know, middle school and high school, and you just like, I'm sick of this shit. I don't want to live here anymore. These people what are we doing here? You might be the first in your family to actually leave Florida and go to the West Coast. Or just leave Florida. Leave whatever. I don't know why I picked Florida. It's weird down there. But you get what I'm saying? Like that's being the cycle breaker. Right? The cycle breaker doesn't want to do what always has been done because it's been done, like because it's always been done. I don't want to live like that. That feels like a trap. Honestly, that feels like a trap. When I look at my own cycles and my own behavior patterns, I see where the trap for myself has been, right? Not loving myself enough and looking for other people to love me. Baby, you can't tell me nothing now. I will kick you to the curb quicker than you can say, hey, beautiful. Because I love myself more than enough to know that you about to hit me with some bullshit. Excuse me for cussing, but let's be real. Let's keep it a buck. Right? Even within my family, I know who it is that I can have a sound conversation with, even if I may not like what they have to say, but I know I need to hear it. And it's been that way for years, my whole entire life. I know who I can call and ask for help without the judgment, without being told, well, what about me? What about my rent? What about what I got to do? What about all of that? Let's keep it a buck, right? The cycle breakers that like we have to know what the what that liberation is going to feel like, right? You're breaking out of a systemic pattern of behaviors that some people in your family have not been awakened to. The emotionlessness, the sexual abuse, the this is how it's always been done. No, we don't want to do it that way anymore, right? And breaking these patterns opens the door for abundance and authentic love and purpose. When we break these patterns, we open up something more, right? It's almost like you've been in a box and all of a sudden you get out and you see the sun shining and you get some breath from some fresh air and you just take that deep inhale and you're like, oh my God, right? And this doesn't mean we love our families any less, because we don't. We want to be able to walk in our fullness and in our kingdom authority without judgment, without the abuse, without the isolation, without the judgment. We want to be able to trial and error this thing just like y'all did. Right? Our trial and errors are going to look a little different because the trial and error we're doing is breaking out of the trial and errors that y'all made. Right? More grace for being human. More grace for being human. The next thing is emotional visibility and healing. Give yourself permission to feel. Name it. Grieve it. And release those emotions that the family may have buried. That's a big one. I was talking to a girlfriend, I think like last week we were texting, and I kept telling her, I was like, I'm feeling something that feels similar to grief, but I don't think it's grief, right? I couldn't put my finger on it. And what I like, it was very strange. Like it was, I'm even now I'm like, oh, what was that? Like it felt like grief, but it wasn't grief, right? It was like it was grief, but it wasn't grief. Like it felt very similar to grief. And what she and I were talking about at that point were the number of emotions that we misname because we've rejected to allow ourselves to sit and be with ourselves to feel. We try to brush over the feelings and the emotions, and we end up turning it into something else, right? Remember, emotions are energy in motion. So what happens when we allow ourselves to actually give ourselves permission to feel, right? Like in that moment, I was also proud of myself because it was like, ah, there's another emotion besides grief that is available. Yet I don't have a name for it because I was never taught that there was anything other than grief in this wheel of what grief can feel like or be like or is associated to. So when we give ourselves permission to feel, we get to find out what else is happening underneath the surface, what those triggers are. And remember, triggers are not just all bad things. They're also good things, right? Like there's certain things I smell that trigger happiness and remind me of my grandmother. Then there's other things that I end up doing, like a behavior that I'm so used to doing, where I get triggered and I start, you know, getting upset and crying because it makes me miss her, right? It's, neither is good or bad either, right? But just understanding what those triggers are. But like, because we've buried feeling, we've misnamed emotions. We've misnamed what we are actually feeling. It was astounding to me in some weird way that I was feeling something similar to grief, but it wasn't grief. And I don't know if it was like on that wheel of grief, or, you know, how they say grief is in seven stages. I don't believe that either. And it was like, what is that, right? I'm always thinking about like how we make this vow to take things to the grave with us. Yes, some things need to be taken to the grave, right? There's some things that I've awakened to that have happened to me that I haven't shared, and I've shared a lot. I think my grandmother is the only person that I've shared almost every single thing with, and she has taken my stuff to the grave, right? And there's things that she has shared with me that she's told me no one else knows that I have vowed to take to the grave, right? But she didn't take her things in silence to the grave, and I didn't take my things in silence to my, like, our own graves, right? There was a reciprocity in our relationship that was so healing that there were things that I felt safe to share with her without judgment, and vice versa, even at her old age, young age. My baby was young, right? So when we, like, yes, some things need to be taken to the grave because we don't want to, you know, start reliving and healing some of these things from childhood or that happened in our family. And now we going after people like a soul food, you know, telenovela, right? Some of that is not necessary, right? You have to know, is that even appropriate? Because there's some things that I can lay out that at this point, it's like, what would be the point in me saying something, right? I've shared it where I needed to share it, where I felt safe to even ask questions about, you know, Granny, if I told X, Y, and Z, what do you think would happen? How do you think they would respond? Is that in a third? And now I get to take that with me and be at peace with it. I get to take it with me because I'm at peace with it. I'm at peace with it. I've released it, right? That's another thing that conversations do. And it allows you to release things. Sometimes we're afraid to say things out loud because I don't actually know, like, why. But we have to remember, life and death is in the tongue. So it's also coming from the intention of our heart space and what the intention is in saying and what we say. Is the intention to harm? Is the intention to kill? Or is the intention to heal? Is the intention to like put a spell out into what the manifestation of what we want to see is? When we do this, we are also saying, this will not be passed down. I will not allow this to be passed down. So it's twofold, right? One, we're not passing down the trauma and the lack of emotional release, right? Because what's not healed moves through the bloodline. And two, we're creating a new dynamic and paradigm shift in how we actually heal in the family. And it's through conversation. It's through holding space, right? It's through the vulnerability of healing and allowing and not having to rush to judgment, right? So now that I've had a grandmother that I can do this with, I feel I've now put myself in position to do this with my son. There's nothing that my son won't tell me. I've created a space, someone created a space for me to come to them in vulnerability and in truth without judgment to share some deep, dark stuff, right? And that allowed for them to share with me some deep, dark stuff and other things in the family that has been passed around and passed down to where now I can do that with my son. Right. He's 12 and there's nothing that he does not tell me. Every 5 minutes is mommy, this. Mommy, that. Mommy, I have a question about this. I have a question about that. Even if he hears something, he's like, oh, mommy, what is that? You know what I'm saying? Like, I've created that space for him because somebody created that space for me. It's the sacredness of being seen and seeing others in truth, right? Even if you don't like what you see in the other person's truth, that don't mean you have to always say something. Because then what's the point, right? Are we choosing peace? Or are we choosing chaos? Because sometimes that truth is deeper than what appears on the surface, and they might not be ready for that awareness. They might not know that they are standing in that. And the last part, following your soul's calling. Trusting the voice within, even when no one else sees the vision. Let me tell you something. Your family loves you. That doesn't mean they have to be a part of the vision. That doesn't mean that they will get the vision or understand the vision or even understand what's happening to you in real time in this moment. The day-to-day is different. A miracle can pop off tomorrow. Something can shift tomorrow. But you have to stay diligent to what it is that you know you've been called to do. It's not going to look the same. You are building a new blueprint, and you don't even the only coaching you have to build this new blueprint is from God. It's from God, because what you are doing, what you are building, what you are creating, what you are, you know, bringing into real time is going to be different than what has already been done. If you are breaking the cycles of behaviors that have been taking place, that means you are doing something from scratch. You are doing a whole lot from scratch. Your life is coming from scratch. So you can't be afraid to start over. You can't be afraid to dig deep into the trenches of those things that kept you in a cycle that was not feeling like home for you. How divine identity is about who God says you are. It goes back to, I think I said this last week too, it goes back to that scripture, I knew you before I formed you in your mother womb. And that's not just Christian culture context, right? I know y'all think just because I've been shuffling the tarot cards that I done forgot about my Bible. No, I read spiritual texts. I read things that give me fruit. I was up scrolling on social media last night. I hate doing that sometimes, but there was this woman's page. Her page is called The Alchemist, and whatever video she was talking about, she said that our divine being was planned before we got here. So there is a version of us that we have to call forth and not be afraid of what's going to come with it. Like I said in the beginning, we have to be committed to disconnection and being misunderstood. We have to be committed to that and keep room open for us to find the places where we are supposed to be connected, right? Our soul family. I always say you have your blood family and your soul family. Your soul family is going to help push you right into that soul work, your soul's calling. What were you on this earth to do? Many are called, but few are chosen. It's what God has cultivated us to be, so that we can do and so that we can have. Not with the trauma that we've endured, not the behavior cycles and the patterns and us having to fall on the sword has shaped us to be. Nice big inhale and exhale. You are not here by mistake or by accident. You are a prayer that your ancestors have prayed for without even knowing what they were praying for, I believe. Your healing is the answer to what your ancestors and the ancestors of others have been waiting for. I love you all for free. The affirmations for this show: what others call rebellion is restoration in action. I am not broken. I was born to break the cycle. My growth isn't disrespectful, it's deliverance. I love you all for free. I hope this has been fruitful. I hope you feel connected to the message. We need more people to step fully into their divine selves, because there is work to be done. What a joy it is to be alive and a part of what is happening at such a time as this. It is. Feel the call and the connection to the now. I love you all for free. I will see you next time.